The next case is 08-418, State of Ohio versus City of Akron. Mr. Lemmerbrock.
Good morning, Chief Justice. May it please the court, Ryan Lemmerbrock on behalf of Appellants Fraternal Order of Police, Akron Lodge Number 7, and Akron Firefighters Local 330, as well as their respective presidents, Paul Holinsky and Phil Gower. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, which will be argued by Mr. Meiser.
Watch your time there.
I don't want to repeat Mr. Meiser's description of Section 34 and the analysis of 9.481 thereunder. I prefer to focus on the City of Akron's arguments against 9.481. However, first, I would like to point out that the City has conceded that if this court holds that Revised Code 9.481 was properly enacted under Section 34, that the court's decision in Rocky River controls and would result in 9.481 superseding the local conflicting residency requirement. Appellants submit to this court that there is no doubt that 9.481 was validly enacted under Section 34. The General Assembly, in enacting 9.481, stated that the residency requirement prohibition sought to promote the comfort, health, safety, and general welfare of public employees by providing them the right to choose where to live, and that by providing that right, it freed those employees of the devil's choice of either maintaining their source of income or addressing those quality of life issues that have been adversely affected by residency requirements, issues such as the inability, as Mr. Meiser referred to, the inability of an employee to live with their spouse in the same household because they are subject to a competing residency requirement, the inability to care for a loved one who may live outside or require care outside of that employee's city, the inability to choose the school district where they will send their children. And the list goes on, as you'll see in the legislative history that's been provided in the union supplement. The city does not contest that these employee interests are advanced by 9.481. Instead, it argues that 9.481 does not fall within the scope of Section 34, the General Welfare Clause.
Counsel, you would concede that there, these cases involve two sets of very legitimate interests. In the Lima case, the mayor outlined a list of things, principally economic, that concern cities that have, you know, crumbling inner city problems, school problems, you name it, and presumably these ordinances were enacted not just as a revenue source, that is to get the income tax money from their employees, but also to keep good people who have good jobs, maintaining nice homes and having an interest in the local schools and all of that. Those are all legitimate interests as well, are they not?
I don't dispute the legitimacy of any interest. I think that
So we have hanging the balance two very legitimate sets of interests. The understandable interests of employees to live where they choose for a variety of reasons. They may want to choose to live outside the boundaries of the municipality that employs them, and those are all legitimate and compelling, but the cities also have a whole set of legitimate and compelling interests as well. So when we get into weighing, that's a tough call. So we're really down, aren't we, to the law, and whether or not the reach of this section of the Constitution is sufficiently broad to permit the General Assembly to do this, and if not, then to the second step, even if they don't have the authority under Section 34 to trump the local ordinance, it's still a state statute, it's still there, and we would have to declare it unconstitutional on other grounds before the cities would prevail.
Your Honor, if I understand your statement correctly, you're saying that the framework of analysis should be one, Article 2, Section 34, right. And then if not that, statewide versus local interests.
Isn't that how we do this?
Yes, that we appellants would agree that that is the appropriate framework. As to your earlier point as to competing interests, I think that the court's decision in American Association of Unity Professors provides some guidance, where it stated that it is not the role of the reviewing court to second-guess the wisdom of the General Assembly in the remedy it has chosen to address an existing problem. The remedy that the General Assembly has chosen in this matter to address those problems that I've just articulated is 9.481. And 9.481 is entitled to a presumption of constitutionality. And I think that I would respectfully ask the court to keep that in mind in considering the city's arguments.
Let me ask you, there's an argument made in one of the briefs that same principle applies to a charter amendment voted by the people of a city. Do you agree with that or
no,
disagree?
No, I don't agree with that, Chief Justice.
No law that supports, we don't have any law that supports that. That's your argument.
I think I understand the city's point correctly, is that somehow the presumption of constitutionality that would be in favor of their local legislation somehow counterbalances the presumption for 9.481. The constitutionality of their local residency requirement is not an issue. It's the constitutionality of 9.481. So that there is no counterbalancing effect here. The city is required to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that 9.481 is somehow inconsistent with Section 34. Appellants submit to this court that they cannot sustain that burden. And as an example, I'd like to now turn to the city of Akron's arguments. First, the city does not so much, in its first argument, it does not so much attack 9.481 as it does argue in favor of its own residency requirement by saying that it's essentially civil service legislation, and that by virtue of it being civil service legislation, it somehow supersedes all state law, including laws enacted under Section 34. Obviously, there is no exception in the Supremacy Clause of Section 34 for civil service legislation. The city claims that its position is supported by case law. However, Rocky River is instructive. It states that that legislation enacted under Section 34 will supersede local legislation enacted under the Home Rule Amendment. That includes civil service legislation. The other cases that the city relies upon, such as Bay Village, Twinsburg, and Kettering, all predate Rocky River. And perhaps more importantly, the majority opinions do not contain a substantive discussion of Article 2, Section 34. The only discussion that I recall seeing, substantive discussion, comes from Justice Douglas, who in his concurrence in Kettering and his dissent, and I believe it was Twinsburg, reiterates the court's holding in pension fund, which is that legislation enacted under Section 34 supersedes local legislation enacted under the Home Rule Amendment. Now, the city's second argument is that of the working conditions limitation, which certainly Mr. Meiser touched upon. I would only reiterate, as this court is certainly aware, that the interpretation being advanced by the city was that being espoused by Justice Wright in his dissent. That was not the interpretation given to Section 34 by the majority. I think that if the court were to accept the working conditions limitation, it would not only require the court to reverse the court's interpretation of Section 34 in Rocky River, but also the court's interpretation of Section 34 10 years later in American Association of University Professors.
Ms. Limmerbrook, let me ask you, if we interpret Section 34 as you argue, general welfare of all employees, what limits would there be on the General Assembly's authority to adopt legislation for the general welfare of all employees?
I think that first we look at the express language of Section 34. I believe that, reading that, there is a requirement that legislation enacted under 34 must rationally relate to the comfort, health, safety, and general welfare of employees. And I would further guidance we could take from the court's decision in Brady versus Safety Clean and BP Chemicals. I know that the court was much divided on those issues, but the court, the majority opinion stated that the legislation at issue in those cases was totally repugnant to the language of Section 34. So there has been some limits drawn by this court as to the scope of the General Assembly's authority under Section 34.
But this case is really a different, it's really a further reach from any case we've had, is it not, don't you think?
I would disagree, Your Honor. The revised Code 9.481 is going to have a more direct and immediate impact on the lives of public employees, more public employees, than the case, than the statute in Rocky River or in Pension Fund. Those cases pertain to a sector of public employees, where this is going to immediately apply to all public employees throughout the state.
Well, all public employees or just
the full-time public employees, Your Honor.
And you wouldn't confine it then, this case, to firefighters and what I call safety employees, right?
I'm sorry.
You don't think this case is confined to the facts?
No, I believe it applies to all full-time public employees.
If we accept your position, counsel, what happens then to home rule?
In regard to specifically residency,
In regard to qualifications of employees within the city?
Well, I would take issue with these city's characterization of the residency requirement as strictly a qualification of employment. City of Akron's residency requirement does not require you to be a resident in order for you to apply for a job. It states that within 12 months, you have to move into the city and maintain your residency. So I think it's somewhat misleading to say that it is strictly a qualification to be hired when it is instead a condition of continuing employment with the city. And also, the question was posed earlier as to the effects that that this would have on the ability of cities to take into account residency in their hiring process. I think that this statute would not inhibit cities from awarding bonus points, as cities do currently in civil service. Also, there are collective bargaining agreements that I'm aware of. There is a suburb in Summit County, next to Akron actually, that provides their employees an incentive, a monetary incentive for maintaining residency. So I think that this statute would not apply to that either. I think that certainly there are means available to the city, specifically on a residency, they have available even if this were to be upheld. And I'd like to reserve my remaining time if I could, but before that, I would just like to briefly conclude that the city in its arguments has not demonstrated that 9.481 is a plain affront to the provisions of Article 2, Section 34. The provisions of Article 2, Section 34 should not be rewritten, as the city urges this court to do, in order to invalidate 9.481. The General Assembly has enacted 9.481 for the comfort, health, safety, and general welfare of public employees. Those public employees now ask that this court uphold the General Assembly's efforts to aid them in their general welfare. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lemmerbrock. Mr. Meiser, are you going to take rebuttal or take your, okay. Ms. Forfia.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, Deborah Forfia for the City of Akron and its Mayor, Donald Pluskwellick.
Counsel, before you begin your legal argument, I'd like to follow up on the question about the impact if this court should uphold the constitutionality of the state statute. Is there anything in this statute or other law that would prohibit the city from advancing its legitimate interests in employee residency through non-mandatory terms, involuntary ways?
Through collective bargaining process. With respect to the collective bargaining process, laws pertaining to residency prevail over any provision of a collective bargaining agreement. So I don't know that we could bargain. If this were collective bargaining, truly, the city would be free to just say no. That option is not available to us. We could bargain at most the effects of the statute, and those effects would be costly. The only proposal I'm hearing is that we should pay people to comply with a residency requirement that each and every city employee acknowledged and accepted when they took the job. So no, I don't think that would be a suitable. I don't think that we could preserve and protect the interests of the city if this statute prevails.
Council, following up on that, the question I asked in the earlier case, I don't see anything in this enactment that would prohibit Akron. Say you're looking at extremely high unemployment in the city of Akron, and you decide we want to give city jobs to people who live here, so that you, whatever your method, whether it's by testing or whether it's at the discretion of the person who needs more employees in their department, that you reward, in terms of obtaining a job, folks who actually live in the city. That doesn't seem to be prohibited. What's prohibited is requiring them to stay there once they have the job. Am I incorrect in that reading?
No, in fact, that's exactly how it works in Akron. We do give preference points to employees, to residents of the city, in determining who to hire.
And this act would not prohibit that?
No, I don't believe it would. This act does not generally pertain to those who are not yet employees. But if on day one, when they become employees, when we really do need them in our city to respond, they could move out. So that doesn't serve our interests either.
Well, the response argument hasn't really been relied on very heavily, it doesn't seem.
Well, it certainly was in Akron's brief. Yes, it is essential to the city's ability to respond quickly. And again, I think the record is replete with the city's evidence that minutes matter.
Well, Council, was that information provided, maybe not necessarily by the city of Akron, but certainly when the legislature was considering this, your main argument is a policy that it's a great idea to have this restriction. And we can't obviously be governed by whether it's a good idea or not. That's not how we're going to make our decision here.
Right.
But I'm presuming that these policy arguments were advanced to the legislature in order for them to take that into consideration before they passed this the statute.
I don't know that we can assume from the statute that they passed that they did take those concerns into consideration, because the line that the state has drawn, and bear in mind, the state has drawn a line. In that respect, it is no different from the city's residency requirement. But the line that they have drawn simply cannot address the different factors in geography, in roads, in the needs of every city. That has to be done on a local level. And in Akron, the 5-county area doesn't work. They could be 62 miles away from the city in good weather.
Are you arguing then that this is a home rule issue for Akron, or are you maintaining that this involves the general welfare under the constitutional provision?
Both issues, Your Honor. And the statute itself, on the face of the statute, it is apparent that this is not enacted for the general welfare of all employees. The legislature stated its intent and its purpose, and that intent and purpose was to permit municipal employees to live any place they desire. What they gave with the one hand, they then snatched right back and put it, albeit a very limited authority, right back where it belongs, with the cities to determine their needs, but without leaving us an effective ability to protect our citizens. And it's not just about the police powers. Not just about the police powers. It is an essential qualification for employment. And this goes not just to Article 2, Section 34, but also to the Home Rule analysis and the city's interest and the absolute dearth of evidence of any statewide concern.
Ms. Forfia, on the qualifications question that I had asked opposing counsel, the comment was it's not a matter of qualifications because somebody can be hired and it isn't till later that they have to become a resident. How would you respond to that? That it's a condition, he stated it was a condition of continuing employment rather than a qualification initially.
It is a qualification for being hired. It is a qualification for keeping the job. Everyone understands, for example, that a city council member has to live in the city. And if that council member determines for his own interests, in his own welfare, to move to Cleveland, he is free to do so. But he is no longer qualified
counsel,
to keep his job as council.
That doesn't seem like a helpful.
I'm sorry?
That doesn't seem helpful in our analysis.
It is only to illustrate that it is a qualification for maintaining the job.
So are you saying that an individual who comes to be hired is aware that this qualification exists and may have, say, how many months do they have to become a resident?
12.
Right. So they know that within 12 months they must become a resident.
In fact, each employee hired by the city and subject to this requirement signs an acknowledgement and acceptance of the residency requirement in bold, all caps, that you are required to become and remain a resident citizen. There are two acknowledgements that are part of the record in this case. They are in the city supplement as well for the individual union presidents.
Council for the Lima made much of the fact that this is a condition for employment, not of employment. But if you don't have to, if you can take the job and not live in the city, then it seems to me it becomes a condition of employment to keep the job that you have to end up moving. Are you making the same analysis of for versus of, or is your argument different than Lima's? Because I have a hard time, if you said it was for employment, I could understand it if you had to be a resident before you could take the job. But it seems to me that it becomes a condition of employment if you're allowed to live outside the city for the first 12 months.
But you have to agree to become a resident in order to be hired. That acknowledgement and acceptance is signed at hiring.
But that seems to be more of a condition of employment than not for employment.
I'm not sure that the distinction warrants a different answer, Your Honor, because condition of employment is generally a collective bargaining term. And this statute is so far outside any concept of collective bargaining that I think the state's and the union's reference to that term is largely irrelevant. It's not collective bargaining. This is not Rocky. So the statute itself, the very language of the statute, defeats its stated purpose. And indeed, the result of the statute does not advance that purpose. In Akron, employees would be permitted to move into the five-county area. The examples that we hear, the sick child, the elderly and infirm parents, this state statute really doesn't address those issues. It is highly unlikely, I would think, and there is certainly no evidence that a city police officer, for example, would move one county away in order to seek medical attention for a sick child. And if the firefighters, elderly and infirm parents are two counties away, this statute does nothing for them. This is a requirement that they all, we all, agreed to on hiring.
Is there a way, in your mind, that we, that that the Evans case, which was the case in which we said that the state law and prevailing wage supersedes a local city's wage law ordinance, is there a way that, that can be distinguished from this case?
Well, absolutely. This court also found that the prevailing wage law was part and parcel of the Collective Bargaining Act. The court had already determined that the Collective Bargaining Act was, a law of general statewide concern, in essence, that the impact on the state was more than on the cities. That is simply not the case here. The fact that 100 and some political jurisdictions have determined to exercise their fundamental powers of local self-government does not somehow then mean that it is a matter of statewide concern. It is not. This court routinely measures the result of a statute when comparing two conflicting grants of authority. And if the result of that statute is that it impacts the city more, then it is very clearly a matter of local self-regulation.
That's the CEI test. That's the CEI test.
Yes, it is.
Is that still a good test in view of our, that was 1968 case. Is that case, it's an old case. I'm not sure it's outdated, but is it still good law?
Yes.
Reading our
It actually
opinion?
Relies on an even older case from the 1950s. But yes, and that is, I think, the only way to determine. Looking at the results of the statute, who suffers the greater impact? And the city's need here is compelling. It is manifest throughout the record. And the state's virtually non-existent.
Counsel, is that a factual test of who gets impacted the most? Or is that a legal test based upon all probabilities from the impact?
It's a difficult question, Your Honor, and I think it is partly both. For there is no way for this court to measure the results of a statute without actually looking at what has happened, what will happen. So facts certainly play a part. There are presumptions, as Justice noted earlier, that both the city charter and the state statute are constitutional. When there are competing statutes, competing presumptions, competing interests, this court must balance, and the presumption is not irrebuttable. It may certainly be rebutted, and the best way to do that, I think, is to look at the facts and the actual impact of the statute on the cities and on the state. And the extraterritorial.
So, counsel, let me just understand that last test that you laid out here. We would find that both statutes are constitutional, and in order to determine which applies to Akron, we would then go and say who's affected the most by what statute? Is that what I understand you having said?
No, and perhaps I wasn't clear. There are competing presumptions. With a head-on conflict like we have here, and the union's assertion that the city's continued enforcement of its charter residency requirement would be in excess of our constitutional authority, and the state's and our assertion that the state has acted in excess of its constitutional authority, one of those presumptions is going to fail.
What is your response to the general welfare issue under Section 34? How would you interpret the general welfare of all employees?
Well, the Ninth District identified, I think, two criteria that this court has looked to before that were present in both the pension case, in Rocky, in AAUP. First of all, the statute must advance the common welfare. In Rocky, it was the history of illegal safety strikes that left the state in virtual chaos. In the pension fund case, it was the bankruptcies or near bankruptcies of pension funds throughout the state. In AAUP, the court identified what it referred to as a disturbing trend of teachers in our universities not teaching. So first of all, I think the state has to identify a compelling need to act for the general public, for the welfare, for the common good. The Ninth District identified the preamble to the Constitution. I think that is where any constitutional analysis must start. It is the essence of the document, and it states the very power granted to each branch of government by the people, and it is to preserve the common welfare. The Ninth District also identified that historically, when this court has found Article 2, Section 34 to be an appropriate authority to support legislation, a comprehensive statewide plan that evidences the state's interest. This is anything but a comprehensive statewide plan. The state drew a line without any specific reference to geography, roads, in the needs of each individual city, and then said, city, you deal with it now. Now that we've tied your hands, you deal with it. That's not a plan. Article 2, Section 34 allows the state to provide through legislation for the general welfare of all employees. This statute provides nothing. It is nothing but a sheer negation of an essential fundamental power of local self-government. So I think the court ought to apply those two things. But more importantly, I think the court needs to determine, in accordance with the history and in looking at the provisions of the Constitution enacted at the same time, both the one that precedes it immediately and the one right after, and the basis for that legislation. Men, women, and children were dying in sweatshops and coal mines throughout the country. Collective bargaining was at the heart of the progressive movement, which was the basis for the enactment of all three of those statutes. The one immediately preceding uses the identical preemption language, and it pertains to mechanics liens. The basis for this statute.
You need to sum up.
Yes. This is an essential exercise of local self-government. Numerous cases of this court have held that. Numerous cases have held that the city's interest in determining the qualifications of its employees prevails over any matter of statewide concern. It is absolutely contrary to the common welfare of the state of Ohio.
Thank you, Ms. Forfia.
Thank you.
Mr. Meiser, you have about a minute and a half.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to begin with the Cleveland Electric case, which there was some there's some disagreement about the application of. Cleveland Electric is one of the leading cases establishing that issues that purport to be matters of purely local self-government still have to be assessed to determine whether or not they actually are purely matters of local self-government, or whether instead they implicate significant statewide concerns. Cleveland Electric has been applied by this court in cases like the Evans case and Redding and Kettering. In none of those cases did the court balance what was happening on in terms of the statewide concerns with what was happening purely within the city. Instead, this court has always looked at the statewide concern side of the ledger. And if there are significant statewide concerns, then the General Assembly can act.
Does
and
CEI then advance your position? Is that your contention?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And your view is that the impact of the employees taking advantage of the provisions of this statute impacts the state because they move from one city, or have I missed your argument?
In part, Your Honor, that's one of the many ways in which the Akron and other local residency restrictions implicate statewide concerns. The General Assembly found that these residency restrictions implicate job applicant pools, they implicate statewide school funding, they implicate the movement of bodies and money and property taxes, because taken together, all of these things have extraterritorial effects. And because the subject matter, public sector labor relations, is a subject matter that's appropriate for the General Assembly to legislate with respect to.
Well, the city of Akron apparently hasn't had, I don't know, maybe the record shows they've had difficulty in hiring these employees who sign the waiver, sign the notice that they have to live within the city within 12 months. So how does it affect the labor pool? Is there evidence of that in the record that there's an impact on a negative impact on labor pool if employees have to live in the city which they're paid?
The General Assembly heard testimony from individuals who said that they could not apply for jobs within certain cities because they had to live where they were currently residing, that they couldn't move because of family concerns or because of where their spouse was working.
I guess they could apply for a job in the city in which they live, though. Was there evidence of that?
They could, Your Honor. But okay. The point is that these restrictions affect where people can live and move, and the General Assembly therefore found that those concerns rise to the level of statewide concerns. And the city's hands are not completely tied here. The city just conceded that they have, they confer something like bonus points on individuals who apply, who live in the city. And the state doesn't take issue with those kinds of sort of affirmative action programs. Mr. Lemmerbrock also testified that some collective bargaining agreements have non-mandatory monetary incentives for persons who live to remain residents of the city.
So, Council, you would say that those would survive if it was an incentive program voluntarily extended by the city, that would survive if we found that Section 34 was controlling here?
They would, Your Honor, because the statute says that the city may not require as a condition of employment that the person live in the city. It doesn't speak to anything that is not a requirement. And therefore, the city could create incentives for residents. It just can't mandate residents within its limits.
Your argument regarding the CEI case is in rebuttal to the home rule argument. Are you still maintaining the general that this is a statute involving the general welfare?
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. Because this is a valid Section 34 enactment, you don't even get to the statewide concerns test. You don't even get to Cleveland Electric unless this court decides
to overrule. If we decide that this is a valid enactment under Section 34, we never even get to home rule. That was your first position, I thought.
That's precisely correct, Your Honor. And so this court can only get to the home rule analysis if it overrules Rocky River or distinguishes it in some way that is inconceivable and that no court prior to this court has been able to distinguish Rocky River from this case. I see that my time has expired.
Thank you, Mr. Miser.
Thank you, Your
Honor. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.